Let's turn to the question of goyim and their position in the world of tzedakah.
Oh, what was that?
Goyim.
Oh.
No, not Gentiles. Now, the position of goyim in the world of tzedakah subdivides into two questions. Number one, giving tzedakah to goyim. And number three, receiving tzedakah. Number two, receiving tzedakah from goyim. There's giving to and receiving from. Those are two questions. So let's deal with them one at a time. The question of giving tzedakah to goyim is easier to deal with, and therefore we shall deal with it first. The Bach is the shita which most of the poskim have followed on this issue. At the end of Perek HaNizokim, it says like this: Mefarnesin aniyei goyim ein aniyei Yisrael. One provides parnasa for the poor goyim together with the poor Jews. But together with the poor Jews, you give money to the poor goyim. Rashi says, "Im meisei Yisrael lo b'kivrei Yisrael, ela misaskin behem im tzaum haragim ein Yisrael." One of the elements of chesed that we do with goyim is we bury them if we find them dead. But you don't bury them in Jewish cemeteries, you bury them separately, but you bury them. And you bury them if you find them mixed together with the Jewish dead. Since you're burying the Jewish dead, that's a chesed, and since they're non-Jewish dead, they're mixed in, the cadavers are all mixed together, so you can also do chesed with the non-Jewish dead and bury them in separate graves. That's the way Rashi understood the Gemara. Now the Bach, in his Perush on the Yoredeya, says Mashma she'ein mefarnesin o mevakrin o kovrim v'goyim eladafka in Yisrael. It sounds like from the words of the Gemara and the way Rashi understood the Gemara, it sounds like you don't do chesed for goyim, like visit the goyim when they're sick or bury them or give them tzedakah. You don't do chesed for them if they are by themselves. But if they're mixed together with Jews and you're doing chesed for the Jews, then simultaneously you can do chesed for the goyim who are in the group together with them.
I mean, like in the hospital, you have a Jew in the same room as a non-Jew, you can visit both of them?
Yeah, you do bikacholim for both of them, but you wouldn't go to do bikacholim just for the goyim. Right? Because the lashon of the Gemara is, aniye goyim im aniye Yisrael. You give tzedakah to the poor Gentiles together with the poor Jews. Now, according to this understanding of the Gemara, the psak of the tour is difficult to understand, because what the tour said is mutar lefanes aniyehem. The tour says it's quite correct to give tzedakah to poor goyim. The tour doesn't mention anything about the dispersing of tzedakah having to be simultaneous for Jews and goyim. The tour is mashma that you can disperse tzedakah money to goyim alone. And therefore, this psak of the Torah is difficult in terms of the way Rashi understands the Gemara. But the Ran has his own perush in Rashi. Lav dafka to hu hadin kishamatsu meisei goyim lavad shemisaskin behem b'nei ha-shalom v'chein lefarnes aniyem levaka choleihem. According to the Ran, you don't need a mixture of goyim and Jews together to be the recipients of chesed. But since the reason we are extending chesed to goyim is mipnei hashalom, so you do that according to the Ran, even if the goyim are by themselves. And that would seem to be the basis of the psak of the tour, that one gives chesed to goyim even if the goyim are by themselves.
Is that the reason what everybody agrees with, Mipnei HaShalom, or is that the reason?
Yeah, Mipnei HaShalom is definitely the reason of the Gemara. Now, according to the Rambam, you have to distinguish between different kinds of chesed. So far, what do we have? We have the Rashi, we have the way the Ran understood the Rashi, now we have the Rambam. The Rambam says you have to distinguish between different kinds of chesed. Rambam says, "Mefarnesin aniye goyim bichlal aniye Yisrael mipnei dachei shalom." If it's a question of giving money to tzedakah to the poor Gentiles, then together with supporting poor Jews, you also support poor Gentiles because of Shalom. But when it comes to Nichum Aveilim and Bikur Cholim and Kavuras Mesim, there he says, Afilu Bifnei Atzman, even if there's no mixture of Jews and Goyim in terms of recipients of the Chesed, you give Chesed to the Goyim even if they're by themselves. So according to the Rambam, you have to distinguish between different kinds of Chesed. Tzedakah, charity, Parnasa, that you give to Goyim only if you're giving to Jews simultaneously. Other forms of Chesed you can extend to them individually. The Bach, after having quoted all of these opinions of the Rishonim, says, Kvar nahagu lefarnes aniyehem af below aniyeh Yisrael. The minhag haposhet, the generally accepted practice, according to the Bach, is to follow the position of the Ran, namely, to even give the poor Gentiles financial support, even if they're all by themselves. So that then is the position of the Bach, based on his analysis of the Rishonim and his understanding of the Minhag HaPashut. The Halacha is in accord with the Ran, that's the way the Tur paskins, and that is the Minhag HaPashut. One does give even tzedakah to the poor Gentiles, even if they are by themselves without any Jews.
So even tzedakah as a nice thing to do, or is it part of the mitzvah of tzedakah?
It's part of the mitzvah of Shalom.
But you're not the kind of mitzvah of tzedakah like 10% if you give money to Goyim.
You can use, yeah. Meiser, the rules of Meiser are very complicated and have to be discussed separately. But if it's a question of the Havdol Recha Kamocha, have you done the Chesed? So that mitzvah is to do Chesed for Jews. Nonetheless, the same things that you would do for Jews, you do for Goyim for a different reason, namely Mishum Dach Hashalom. According to the Ran and the Tur and the Bach, you do the same things.
So you wouldn't get to the 10% for Sada.
Bottom line, you could even use 10%. Bottom line, you could even use the Maaser, but that's for different reasons. Okay, the Shach brings the opinion of the Bach, and he agrees with it, and once we have the Shach added to the list, a person holds that way, that more or less ends the discussion. The Halacha, the mainstream of the Halacha is Ran, Tur, Bach, Shach, that one relates to Goyim just as one relates to Jews in terms of doing Chesed. Okay? Now we have the next question, which is far more complicated, and that is receiving tzedakah from Goyim. That is not so simple. The Yordaya says it is also for a Jew, litol tzedakah min ha-goy b'fehesia. Also for Jews to accept tzedakah from Goyim in a public way. If the Jew cannot survive with Jewish charity alone, and he cannot arrange to be supported by the Goyim in a private way, he's allowed to take the tzedakah from the Goy even in public. That's the halacha of the Shulchan Aruch. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, there's an isur for the Jew to take tzedakah from the Goy in public. And that isur is set aside if he cannot survive without it, and he cannot make arrangements to get it stuck in private.
What's the isur?
This we'll see in a moment. Both the Shach and the Taz say the reason is kevan de ikka chilu Hashem de mavaze nafshi b'fehesia. The isur of taking tzedakah from the goy b'fehesia is the isur of chilu Hashem, because it's a bizoyim and because it's b'fehesia.
When we talk about Goy in this context, does that apply to the government of the country?
Yeah, this we'll see in a moment that Rav Kook had, Rav Kook thought so, yes. We'll see in a moment that Rav Kook thought it applies even to a non-Jewish government.
It's also implied to is it only like over the Zara, or applied to like Christians and Muslims as well?
It applies to every non-Jew, equally. It has nothing to do with the fact that they are over the Zara, it has to do only with the fact that they're not Jewish. Now, the problem with this approach is the next din in the Yoredea, which says Melech Osar Sheshalach Mamon LeYisrael Tzedakah, a non-Jewish government, king, a minister of state or whatever, who sent Tzedakah to the Jews, Ein Machzirin Oto Mishum Shlom Malchut. He can't send the money back, because that would be a slap in the face of the non-Jewish government, and one is not allowed to insult them. Mishum Shalom, you have to accept the tzedakah which the non-Jewish government sends to the Jews. Ela notlim memenu, you take the tzedakah money they sent, the yinaten la'aniye akum beseter, and you distribute the money to poor Gentiles secretly. Kadesh lo yishama hadava hasar. As long as the king doesn't hear what's going on, you accept his money, the king is happy because he thinks he gave tzedakah to the Jews, and the Jews use that money to support poor Goyim, and there's no chilul Hashem. Hagar, the Ramah adds, Yesh omrim, shteya'aseh behem mashetziva lo hamoshel. Some people hold, the Ramah says, that if the king said to give the money to poor Jews, the money should be used for poor Jews. Why? Shach says, because it would be genevis das to take the money from the government, money which was earmarked for poor Jews, and use it for poor Goyim. That would be genevis das, and that's usher. And therefore, since we have to accept the money from the non-Jewish government because of Shlomo Malchut, then because of genevis das, we have to use the money for that for which it was designated. Machlokes between the Rechaber and Ramah.
To give to the poor doesn't necessarily mean, I don't think the government usually knows who is Jewish and who's not Jewish. To give it to the poor.
In those days they knew. In those days they knew, and nowadays they also know. If the federal government in Washington gives money for a lunch program in yeshivas in Brooklyn, then they think the money is going to Jews.
But then let's say there's the unemployment insurance and there's the welfare checks which goes to certain areas.
That's different. That's indeed different. Okay. So we see a machlokas between the Mechaber and Ramah about whether or not the Jews can accept governmental tzedakah, min ha-melech, min ha-sar. And the Aruch HaShulchan has a very interesting view. He says, "Lema poshet sheyesh lekabel tzedaka min hagoyim, kevan shadochak rav ma'od." The Aruch HaShulchan, who lived in idyllic Lithuania, where everyone was always happy and singing all the time when they weren't learning Torah. You remember what it was like in Litva? They were either learning Torah or they were singing all the time. They were always very, very happy there. But that was despite the fact that they were in destitute poverty. Now, since they were in destitute poverty all the time, and it was therefore a matter of pikuach nefesh to accept charity money, so the Aruch HaShulchan says, since it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, then that which the Shulchan Aruch said, that if you can't live without it, you're allowed to take it, even in public, that's the halacha which applies in Lithuania today. Since we can't live without it, therefore we're allowed to take the money even in public. Not only is that the P'sak of the Shulchan Aruch, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, but the Rambam says flat out, Ben Noach, Sheratza la'asos mitzvah, Mishah mitzvah satara, kadei l'kabal schar, any goy who wants to do any mitzvah, ain't moment not to lasot al chachila khalacha. You don't stop him from doing this in a halachic way. Any guy who wants to do any mitzvah, bakashai, we don't prevent him from fulfilling the mitzvah according to the halacha. Im hevi ola mekabel mena. If he brings a korban, we accept it and we offer the korban in the halachic way. Nosan tzedaka, that's what the Rambam gives as an example. If the goy wants to give tzedaka, you accept it from him, you let him do the mitzvah. The Yeraesh li shenos notnim oto l'aniyei Yisrael, ho'il v'hu nizon miYisrael, v'mitzvah l'achayosoto ad kamashon. The Rambam says that since the goy wants to do the mitzvah of tzedaka for Jews, we should accept the money and disperse the money among poor Jews. So not only is it the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, but it would seem to be the Shita of the Rambam, that we can accept tzedakah from Goyim. Now we come to what I think is most important from a hashgachic point of view and a halachic point of view, from every point of view, what I think is most important tshuva and this whole matter is the Binyan Siyah.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Rabbi Yaakov Eklinger. I don't have another one. Rabbi Yaakov Eklinger, he was a Rav in Frankfurt in the generation before Rav Shishunov Hirsch, 150 years ago. He was a Rosh Hashiva there, and Rav Shishunov Hirsch was, among other things, a Talmud of his. He wrote the Orach Lemeir, he wrote the Binyan Siyah, he wrote a number of very important svarim, both in Halacha and in Lamdus. He was one of the big names. So in the Binyan Siyah, he was asked about the following situation. They advertised in Germany, they put notices in the Jewish newspapers in Germany advertising that they wanted to collect tzedakah for famine in Eretz Yisrael. Famine in Eretz Yisrael. In Germany, they wanted to collect tzedakah money. They put advertisements in the newspaper with a post office box, send in your contributions to post office box such and such, and we will forward the money to the poor Jews who are starving in Eretz Yisrael. In horror of horrors, some checks arrived to the post office box from Goyim. They could tell from the names that some Goyim contributed to this tzedakah. And the question arose whether they should accept the money. And if they should accept the money, what should they do with it? So they asked Rabbi Yaakov Eklinger. Rabbi Yaakov Eklinger has a fascinating approach to this issue. It says like this. First, Safek im halacha kedivrei harama or kedivrei ha-mechaber. Machlokes between the mechaber and Rama, whether we are allowed to accept money contributed by goyim in cases of dochak.
So Ashkenazic tzedakah and Sfarik tzedakah. So weren't they Ashkenazim there?
He's Ashkenaz, but he points out that Ashkenaz poskim, he brings Ashkenaz poskim also felt like the Mechaber, not like the Ramah. So it's a problem how to poskim. Then he says, "Bin nidon hasheela, I afshal lazun aniyei eino Yisrael." Sheharia Cruz haya b'shvil aniyei Yisrael dafka. Lachen im yafarsimu, im yafarnesu aniyei eino Yisrael, ikke genevus das. The money was sent in specifically to support poor Jews because that's what was advertised. And if we would use the money for poor goy, they're probably starving goy in Eretz Yisrael also in those days. But that would be genevus das. So we can't use the money for poor Arabs in Eretz Yisrael. That would be genevus das. The im yifarnes Yisrael mehen, ika meshum b'yivosh k'tzira. Now we come to the real problem here. If we would use the money to support poor Jews, we would be in violation of the principle of b'yivosh k'tzira. Now, Bivosh Ksira is a pasuk in Yishayahu. The harvest dries out. Yivosh Ksira, the harvest dries out. And that pasuk in Yishayahu is understood by the Gemara in Rashi, in Bava Basra, Kishe tichles chus shebiyodan v'yovesh michluchis maisei tzedaka shalahem az yishaveinu. If the goyim would be deprived of any merits that they have of doing mitzvahs, then they would dry up and blow away. Why do they exist? Why do those goyim exist? I mean, why does anyone exist? Because they have some merit, right? So those goyim out there are doing some mitzvahs. They must have some merits from some mitzvahs they do, and that's why they continue to exist. If we could just block off the flow of merit that they get from doing a few mitzvahs here and there, then they would dry up and blow away. Now, by accepting tzedakah from them, we are helping them do a mitzvah. We are increasing the flow of merit into the goyim, thereby sustaining them. If we wouldn't accept the tzedakah from them, we would cut off that flow of merit, and if we could cut off enough mitzvahs from them, then they would have no more, but they'd dry up and blow away. Right? Now, according to Binyan Siyam, since what we don't want is for them to do mitzvahs, since that's what we don't want, is for them to do mitzvahs.
What?
Because if they don't do mitzvahs, they won't have merit. If they don't have merit, they'll dry up and blow away, then the world will be a much better place without going. The Yed Mechalek, the two situations. The Gemara in Vav Basra, which introduces this whole principle, has a drasha on the pasuk tzedaka tirom to the pasuk in Tilim, the pasuk in Mishlei says tzedaka tiromem goy chesed leumem chanes. Tzedaka elevates a nation, and chesed of the nations is a sin. What's the pasuk mean? How can the pasuk say tzedaka elevates a nation, and the chesed of the nations is a sin? The Gemara says tzedaka elevates a nation, that's if Jews do it. Chesed of the nations is a sin, that's if goyim do it. What on earth is the difference between Jews doing tzedaka that it's elevating, and goyim doing chesed that it's a chatas? What's the difference? The Peirish, according to the Binyan Siyam, is like this. B'Yisrael mikra tzedaka b'le'um m'chates haino d'Yisrael ma'asha nosin la'oni eino nosin m'pnei wachmanu slavad ela shechoshav atzma m'chuyiv alpi hadin d'yodea shekodesh baruch hu bor anim l'zakos esa ashirim u'shememash shenosin lo akodesh baruch hu yesh bo chelek shenitan la'anim v'sheino osa rak mishpat tzedek l'achzir La'acher ma'ashenitin lo b'shvilo. When a Jew gives charity to a poor person, he knows the rich person who's giving tzedakah to the poor person, the rich Jew knows that he's just fulfilling a mitzvah. It's a din. The Jew who gives tzedakah knows that he's giving tzedakah because the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants him to give tzedakah. It's a halacha. And the rich Jew knows that some of the money that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him was earmarked to transfer to the Jews. The Jew was just doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him $100, and a ton of it, he knows HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to hand over to the poor people. So the Jew who gives tzedakah to the poor person couldn't care less about the poor person. The Jew who gives tzedakah to the poor person thinks of himself as fulfilling a mitzvah of Hashem, and that's why he's doing it. Lachein eno nosin mifnei shel libo he'ir bo cheshek lerachem al ha'aniyim. The Jew has no sense of compassion for the poor person. Elo mifnei shel mechuyev lezeh al pi yosha. The Jew is doing what is right. Not he has no sense of compassion for the poor person, chas v'shalom. Only goyim have a sense of compassion for the poor. Zed tzedakah tiromem goy. The Jew who gives tzedakah to the poor person because he thinks of himself as fulfilling a divine obligation, that's an act of charity which elevates the Jewish nation.
What was wrong with having compassion?
You can explain. Aval b'le'umim, the goyim, einam nosnim al pi b'china zo. The goyim don't get stuck up because they feel obligated to do so that Hashem commanded them to. Ela shelibo meya bo cheshek lerachem lechanin. The goyim give tzedakah because they feel compassion, they feel pity for the poor person. V'zeh ma shenikra etzlo chesed bilvad, and that's what the goyim call chesed. V'zeh chatas, and this is a sin. Divezer kol machshavto eino rak b'shvil atzmo lahashiv ta'avat libo kemo shemimale sha'ar ta'avotav. The goy feels bad when he sees the suffering person, and he gives the tzedakah, the charity, to the poor person so that he'll feel better. Hold on. Okay. the goy feels a sense of pity, a sense of compassion. He feels bad when he sees the suffering. By giving tzedakah, he feels better. He did it for himself. Masha Ein came the Jew who does it for Hashem. That's the difference. Okay, now there's one other big conclusion to be drawn from this. Gam neged ha'ani yesh chilek. From the point of view of the poor person, there's a big difference here. Dim ha'ani yodea shemasha mekabel hu chelka shenitin lam ha'kadosh baruch hu enom izbayesh. If the poor person knows that he's just receiving something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to get in the first place, and he's just getting it as a mechanism, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the money to the poor person, to the rich person, but it's just a mechanism to get it to the poor person. If the money belonged to the poor person in the first place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu earmarked it for the poor person in the first place. There's nothing for the poor person to be misbayish for. He's getting what is his. And this is the mechanism that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to get it. And the rich person who's giving him the money doesn't feel pity for him, doesn't feel compassion for him. There's no reason for the poor person to feel shame. He's not an object of pity. He's not an object of compassion. He's just part of this mechanism. This is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu moves the money around. Right? But it's his money in the first place. And this is the way he's supposed to get it. But if a goy, kishi yodeya sherak machmas nidvas leiv hanosein, shechosh vo lechesed mekabel matana misbayish. If the poor person views himself as being the object of pity, the object of compassion, and that's why the rich person is giving him the tzedakah, so there the poor person is misbayish, an object of shame. And that's chatas. That's a sin. So here we have from the Binyan Tzion the whole analysis about what tzedakah is all about. And there are two possibilities. The good way, the Jewish way, which is elevating, namely, the rich person is not acting out of a sense of compassion or pity for the poor person. Rather, he realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him $100, 10 of which was intended by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the poor people anyway, and he's giving the poor people what is due to them. And therefore, the poor person does not have a sense of shame, because he's not the object of pity or compassion, and the rich person doesn't particularly care about him anyway. He's just getting what's his money in the first place. That's the good way. The bad way is the way the goyim do it. That's the chates, where the rich person feels bad when he sees the suffering of the poor person, and the rich person, to make himself feel better, gives tzedakah, thereby transforming the poor person into an object of pity, an object of compassion, which is shame for the poor person, and that's chates. No good.
Did he permit the stuck at the end? Did he tell him he can't do it?
Lefiz, yeah. Kevan shelo shalchu ha'enam Yisrael nidvotayem ela ba'asher sheshamu gadol ha'yogan va'anocha. Since the goyim did not send in their contributions to the post office box except as a response to the feeling of compassion when they heard about the suffering in Eretz Yisrael, Jews always made contributions. These goyim were moved to do it out of a sense of compassion. Bazeh yesh litlot shemifnei rachmanut b'toras chesed matnu. The goyim who sent in the money to the post office box surely did it out of compassion and a sense of pity. Lachem mutar lekabel mehem. Therefore, of course, we can accept their tzedakah money. Kevan she'ein zchutam gadol kol kach. They're not doing a mitzvah. Right? They're not doing a mitzvah. They are just making themselves feel better. Haheta hutafka b'tzimah. She'ena Yisrael lo yifasem et shmo. I'm assuming that it's not b'fahes here, and therefore there's no chil Hashem, then it's mutter. That's the approach of the Binyan Tzion. You don't like it.
But I don't think
there are two different mechanisms of philanthropy. The halachic mitzvah mechanism and the compassion pity mechanism. One is a mitzvah, one isn't.
I'm not sure about the approach to goyim.
You think they might have a sense of moral obligation?
especially like think of Islam, for example, which commands that they're subject to give 2.5%. So they do it also as a sort of mitzvah.
And so he of course didn't know about it. He lived in a Christian state. He didn't know about that. But even among Christians, there might be those who have a moral sense, an ethical impulse, who might say, well, we don't care about the suffering of the multitudes, but it's an ethical imperative, a moral duty of mankind to support the poor. That's a mitzvah. And like the Rambam said, a goyim can also do mitzvahs. Even the mitzvahs are not parash of mitzvahs, goyim can also do.
Exactly, you can quote that Rambam.
Because if they're doing a mitzvah, then we don't want to encourage them to do mitzvahs.
Well, that's the point I don't agree. It doesn't sit well with
me. Oh, well, let's look at Rav Kook, and then we'll understand that even greater. Rav Kook dealt with the problem of a yeshiva somewhere in Eretz Yisrael which received a financial contribution from the non-Jewish government. I don't know which government, I don't know which yeshiva, but that's the problem. Like, it's sort of hard to imagine such a thing would happen, that a yeshiva would be supported by a non-Jewish government abroad, but apparently that's what happened. He begins by quoting the Tosfos, Shemutar lekabel korbanot v'chol ma shedomeh lekorban kagon matana levet kineset min agoyim mishum shlom machut. We already know that you're allowed to accept korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash, and Tosfos says not only a korban in the Beit HaMikdash, but anything which they donate, if they donate something for shul, furniture or something, you're allowed to accept that also, all because of shlom malchut. Kivan shelo chilku b'tosafot ben kishemekabel yachid lehecha shemekablim rabim mashma she'en lechalek. So Tosfos does not distinguish between a community receiving tzedakah from goyim or individuals. It should all be the same.
But the one thing is, like, you get it. One thing is actively trying to get
it. Oh, so he's going to deal with this in a moment. Nimtza shemeikar adin asur lekabel afilu korbanot min agoy. If we didn't have this approach of shlom malchut, we would have said that it's usher to receive a korban from the goyim. Shlom malchut is a heter for something which otherwise would have been usher. Ela shehitiru mishum shlom malchut. Ika tam ha'isa hu mishum bivosh kitzira. Why would it have been usher had we not had the heter of shlom malchut? It would have been usher because of this principle of bivosh kitzira. If we don't accept the tzedakah from them, then we are depriving them of a mitzvah, thereby depriving them of some merit, and they'll dry up and blow away all the faster. Dechashuv kim ma'arichim b'zeh ha'galut. Every time we help them do a mitzvah, for example, by accepting tzedakah from them, we are just lengthening galut. B'zeh ein lechalek ben yachid l'rabin. No difference between a yachid or a community. Adraba, mitzvah de rabin hi yoter gedola. If they're giving tzedakah to the public, to the community, that's an even greater mitzvah for them. And therefore even greater merit for them. And therefore even greater lengthening of the galut. Haschut yoter gedola. V'ikr yoter bivosh k'tzira tishan. All the more reason not to accept money from them if it's for the public, for our public good. More of a mitzvah, therefore more of a schut, therefore more of a lengthening of the galut.
Well, on what does Rav Kook base that statement? That galut would be lengthened.
What the Gemara says is if we deprive them of doing mitzvot, bivosh ketzira, they'll dry up and blow away.
Right.
The interpretation of that as pertaining to lengthening of the galut, that's Rav Kook. That's his chiddush. Okay, lachem berabim ein lachem berabim ein lechalek ben tzinah v'hesia ela hakol asur mishum bivosh k'tzira asherei ikas chut gedola. It's also for individuals to accept tzedakah from goyim, more asa for a community organization to accept tzedakah from goyim, because the goyim have the merit of tzedakah.
Like someone wants to convert, that would be the same category as Kibosh Kesira?
Yeah, so here at the Poskim provided about candidates for conversion, whether they can start doing mitzvahs yet, whether they should be encouraged to do mitzvahs yet. It is a little bit of controversy among Poskim, in fact, what the status of candidates for conversion might be. There's room for some leniency there. If a yochid receives tzedakah, accepts tzedakah from the goyim, the yesh bezeh ziluta. Karinin l'makablin ochle davar acher. The Jew who accepts, the individual Jew who accepts tzedakah from the goy, is mezalzel himself, mevazer himself. U'mishum hochi hem psulim le'edut. Because of the bezayon which they place themselves in, they're pasul for edus. The Divrei Rambam him bechlal bezuyim. The Divrei Rashi bezoyin asa mishum chil Hashem. Sharei mizbazi Yisrael b'shmei God v'asiyah. So it's clearly an isur, whether it's like Rashi holds because of the chil Hashem, or like Rambam holds because of bezoyin, machlokes, but surely asa. Ulam ze dafke b'v'asiyah, aval lo b'tzina. Lachin mutar liyachid lekabel tzedakah min hagoy b'tzina. The only isur for yachid to receive tzedakah from a goy is b'chehesia, that would be chil Hashem, or that would be b'zayin. But if it's b'tzina'ah in private, that eliminates the chil Hashem element. Further, Rav Kook said, b'makam she'asur m'shum bizui, ein le'asur m'shum bivosh k'tzira. U'v'makam she'asur m'shum bivosh k'tzira, ein le'asur m'shum b'zayin. Rav Kook points out that these two principles, the principle of b'zayin, and the principle of depriving goyim of doing mitzvahs so they will dry up and grow up lowly, these two principles cancel each other out. If the goy is giving tzedakah in a way that he creates bizoyim, shame for the Jew, mamela, the goy's not doing a mitzvah, and there's no problem of lengthening the galut because he's not getting the merit of doing a mitzvah. And if he is doing a mitzvah of tzedakah, and therefore there's the problem of lengthening the galut, memela, there's no problem of bezoyin or chilul Hashem from the Jewish point of view in accepting the tzedakah. These two principles inevitably cancel each other out. Therefore, heicha de'isa leha lesa leha de'gabe yachid shayach rak tam de'mevazin nafshei v'zedafka b'fahesia. As far as an individual Jew is concerned, the only problem would be the problem of Chil Hashem, and that's only a problem if he accepts the money in a public way. A plaque is put up commemorating the goy. Tam shall be vash ktira. The issue of depriving goyim of the merit of doing mitzvahs, lo shamanu ela b'tzedakah derabim. That only pertains to accepting tzedakah for the public, for a public institution, not for an individual. V'ein b'zeh mishum b'zoyin, shemit chaleket al yedei gabay. And no Jews are going to be shamed by this, because the money is actually going to be dispersed to individual Jews by a Jewish gabay. Adrabah, ha-gabay mitkabed b'kabalata shehu oseh l'tavat haklal. V'aniyim mikablim min ha-gabay shehu Yisrael. There's no bezoyin here at all.
If the government gives a 50 yeshiva,
then the yeshiva distributes the money to the individual talmidim in the form of lunch or whatever it is.
Yeah, but if it's given to the institution as a whole, basically it's a public thing.
So you can't put up a plaque commemorating that. Now, one more point has to be made in order to round out the picture. This whole business of depriving goyim of doing mitzvahs so that they will not have any merits, so that they will dry up and blow away, the mucker of this idea in the Gemara, in the first parak of Bava Basra, which we quoted, is of course talking about a situation in which the goyim that we're referring to are rishoyim. If the goyim to whom we are referring are rishoyim, and therefore they are oppressing Am Yisrael, then of course we don't want to do anything which will lengthen their control over Am Yisrael. And in the example given in the Gemara, there was a non-Jewish government which was oppressing the Jews, and the only reason they wanted to do tzedakah was in order to get the merit of the mitzvah so that they could continue oppressing the Jews. So if we're talking about a non-Jewish situation where they are rishaim, then, and although they are rishaim, they want to do a mitzvah so as to have the merit of the mitzvah, so as to be able to continue doing what they're doing, then we don't help them do the mitzvah. That's the situation that the Gemara in Baruch Bas is talking about. Is it?
How is that possible? On the one hand, they can accept the fact that they're getting merit from the mitzvah, but on the other hand, they're against Jews, right? Like,
yeah, it sounds inconsistent. But the truth is that many of them were inconsistent. Kachaya. So, let us then pause at this time, and in Yetz Hashem. We'll finish this up. We finished the Minchas Yitzchak. We have finished the Minchas Yitzchak over here. Here's a Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak from Manchester, Steinbaus, originally from Hungary. After World War II, he was in Manchester. Then he came to Eretz Israel, where he became the head of the Eda Haredi to Meir Sharim. He wrote, "L'chadchila, aim lahaniach kupot shel tzedaka b'bursa, b'makom shenochrim yitrimu." You can't put a little kushka to collect tzedaka in a public place like a stock exchange, because goyim will put money in, and you'll be receiving tzedaka from goyim. Ta'am ha'isur, mishum bivosh tzira tishavana. The reason is, like we saw last time, that we don't want to promote these chuyot, we don't want to increase the merit of the goyim by letting them do the mitzvah of tzedakah. Rather, we would like to deprive them of that merit. Hu asur afilu b'tzina. Therefore, this is asur, even if there's nothing public to receiving the tzedakah from the goyim. If it be in public, then we have Chil Hashem added to the problem. Ve'eno mutar, rak ve'eno yachol liyot l'chiyot tzedakah shel Yisrael. If the Jews would be unable to survive without the non-Jewish tzedakah, then we saw last time the Shulchan Aruch holds it's mutar mishum pikuach nefesh to take the tzedakah from the goyim, and the Aruch HaShulchan said that was the normal thing in Eastern Europe. אף על פי שיש צדדי היתר באורך השולחן, מכל מקום אינו כדאי להיכנס בפרצת החוקה. Even though the Aruch HaShulchan said it was a normal thing to accept tzedakah from goyim, that was in those days where they couldn't survive without it. As long as it's possible to survive without it, as it is today, one should not accept it. בדיעבד, מותר לקח את המעות שתרמו לאחרים כיוון שבזה nonetheless, nowadays, if they give money, b'di'eved, that money is mutter, there's no isur in the money itself. We should not solicit money from them, but if they give us money, that money is mutter, and we're allowed to use it because they are not over their avodah zarah. So the approach of the Minchas Yitzchak turns out to be a very strict one. One should surely not solicit money from them. One should not even put the charity boxes in a location where they're likely to put in money, but the b'di'eved, any coins that they put into the pushka on mutter.
That seems very strange. A number of grants. Well, first of all, at least in the United States, for sure, you have United Way, for example.
Oh, but that's when we're going to come to that. Well, let's do that now, because that's really very important. That's the Igros Moshe here. That's the Igros Moshe. You have the Igros Moshe? Igros Moshe. Let's do the here somewhere. Here is the Igros Moshe. He deals with exactly this issue. It's in the Yoredeya section, Chelik Alexim Kufnim Ted, regarding something called the federations. You know what the federations?
Federation.
Oh, that's it, the federations.
Oh, oh,
the federations in America.
That's that's what he wrote.
Yeah, the federation. The federation is a united Jewish philanthropy which collects money from the whole spectrum of the Jewish community, from and not from, and uses that money for the benefit of the whole spectrum of the community.
And for Israel.
And they have a deal, mm-hmm. Haluka, so it goes to Israel, mm-hmm. right? In Gabay HaKupa Eino Shomer Torah, if the guy in charge of dispersing the money is not from, Asur Liten Leota Kupa, not allowed to give any money to that charity, as explained in Bava Basra, Lo yiten adam pruta la'arnaki shal tzedaka ela imken numuna alav k'Rav Chanina ben Tadya. The Gemara says you shouldn't give money to any tzedaka organization unless the guy responsible for dispersing the money is a responsible person. Pershu b'Tosafot she'e ne'eman k'moto. In the Kohen Tosafos, responsible means someone who has ne'emanut al fi halacha, which means they have to be frum. That's also the psak of the Rambam and also the psak of the Tur. The federation, not name hagabaim lemosdot hakofrim. The people in charge of dispersing the money for the federation, some of the money they give to non-religious organizations like Reform and Liberal.
And they themselves are certain on that.
Right.
The dispersers of the money.
Asur liten sham klal, so it's asur to give any money into that system, because some of it will be dispersed to liberal or reform Jewish institutions. Nim tzadik tomech b'mal tav mosdot hamechanchim yiladim lechpor b'ikrei adat shehem kemesitim u'medichim v'hu ke'ozer lahem. If you contribute to those organizations, you're helping support anti-religious organizations. Further, he wrote in Chelek Bet regarding a mikveh which was built by financial contributions of non-Jews. There he said, "Min ha-ra'ui shelo l'hanicham l'shtamesh b'mikveh l'gerut shelahem." The non-religious Jews, the Reform or Conservative or Liberal Jews, contributed money for the building of the mikveh, and now they want to use the mikveh for their conversions, which are not halachically correct. Aval im hem natnu ma'ot al binyan mikveh, if they gave some money to build the mikveh, yifshal l'ma'am, you can't keep them out. Whoever is in charge of the mikveh has no responsibility for what they do, but you can't keep them out because they paid for part of the mikveh, and therefore they have some ownership over the mikveh, and therefore they have the right to use it.
Very questionable, what he's saying.
So what happens in America today is every time they build a new mikveh, when I lived in New Haven in the state of Connecticut, the Jewish community moved before I lived there, years before I lived there. The Jewish community was centered in a downtown area. Mm-hmm. Over the course of a generation or two, they'd moved further away from the center of town. But the mikveh was still located in the old part of town, mm-hmm. which got to be a big problem because the neighborhood deteriorated, and it was somewhat dangerous to go there, especially at night, and the ladies were very unhappy.
Friday
was impossible to go there because it was too dangerous to go to that neighborhood on by foot. This is obviously a problem. So they decided quite correctly that they had to build, or they had to abandon that mikveh, sell the building, and build a new mikveh where the Jews lived. That's expensive. So they had to raise money to build a new mikveh. So the conservative and the reform Jews of New Haven, who apparently knew this tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, insisted on contributing part of the money to the construction of the new mikveh, so that they would have ownership, so that they would be able to use the mikveh for their conversions. So the Orthodox Jews were unhappy about that. And so they thought, we will try to raise the total sum from amongst ourselves, so we will not have to accept any of their money for the construction of the mikveh. This failed miserably. and in order to have enough money to build the mikveh, they had to take from the conservative and liberal shuls.
That's strange. When I said that it seems strange, I mean, if the mikveh is normally in Kansas City, it's attached to the Orthodox shul. So if someone wishes to give money towards it, they give money to it. It's still the rules are established by the Orthodox shul.
In many communities, the mikveh is separate from the shul.
Okay.
And sure, true in New Haven, where there are many shuls, several shuls, and only one mikveh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you see the approach of the Igrot Moshe. The approach of the Moshe is that since you cannot support anti-religious organizations, therefore you cannot give tzedakah to an umbrella organization like the Federation, which is going to support anti-religious organizations.
Take money from the umbrella
organization? Sure. You rescue every penny you can from them. In England they still have pennies, right?
Yeah.
They didn't change over the cents. 100 pennies in a pound.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know,
okay, no, they changed to hundreds. Yeah.
That was a long time.
They no longer have 12 and 20. Used to be 12 and 20, right?
They changed that in 72.
12 shillings, 20 pence?
Yeah.
20 pence to the shilling, 12 shillings to the pound, something like that?
20 shillings to the pound.
20 shillings to the pound. 12 pence to the shilling.
Brought to you by the same people who created 12 inches to the foot and 5,280 feet to the mile.
You know, it's like trying to calculate a 20% discount on 50 pounds, 8 shillings, and 4 pence. You know, like, first you have to convert it all to pence, and then figure out your discount, and then put it back again, right?
What I always wonder is what Mr. Fahrenheit was drinking when he created his scale that freezes at 32.
He probably just added up a column of pounds, shillings, and cents. You're just adding up a column is also not easy, right? Yeah. We're here. Now we're ready for Rav Herzog. Let's talk about Rav Herzog. Rav Herzog was Austrian, Ireland, actually. Great.
No, not even
he wasn't. He wasn't. Well, from the Isles, anyway. and he came to work to the hair factory. When he came to Eretz Israel, people say he was the Rav HaRashi, but it's not true. He used to sign his name, not Rav Rashi, but he used to sign his name Rosh HaRabbanim.
And what is the difference between them?
No, no difference at all. But he called himself Rosh HaRabbanim.
So there was no other Rav?
No, no, he was the chief rabbi.
Okay.
He was the successor of Cook. So Rav Herzog in his tshuva says like this. He's asked about whether it's permissible for a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael to accept money from someone who is muhram, someone who's under cherem. Now all kinds of people are in cherem. All kinds of people are excommunicated. They're all wicked people, and one should distance oneself from them.
Or they disagree with someone.
Are yeshivas in cherem?
Yeah, you see, I told you a lot of people are in cherem.
So we shouldn't be here.
Were the yeshivas in cherem also? Okay. Well, who did they?
Since the
Rosh
Hashanah teaches goes
to March. So
the
Rosh Hashanah
is
going
to
tell
for a long time.
Yeah?
Who
did that?
I don't know.
What,
this
yeshiva?
No, you shouldn't believe everything over here. The, can't, that's what they sent to the demo girls, huh? I tell the difference. I would right away. The, so there are all kinds of people who are muhram, who are wicked people, and you should distance yourself from them. And among the ways in which you must distance yourself from someone who is in cherem is that you're not allowed to have any business dealings with them, can't accept any money from them, which means you can't accept tzedakah from them either. Among the people who are in cherem, I'll tell you my favorite cherem. I've collected many cherems. I have a whole file full of them. My favorite cherem, my really favorite, is Rabbi Lander. You know Rabbi Lander? No. Rabbi Lander is the president and chief executive officer of Touro College in New York. You know Touro College in New York?
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where the Fum guys can go and go to college, right?
Yeah.
They have a branch here too. To a college, a Fum college in New York. It's the Fum version of YU. So the problem with it is that he created a Fum place where yeshiva guys could go to college. Previously, their only choice was to go to a non-Jewish college or to YU, both of which were unthinkable, and therefore they wouldn't leave yeshiva to go to college. But by creating a Frum place for him to go to college, he thereby undermined the yeshiva world.
Well, we have one in Montreal called Tav right now, which is run by also for like some people,
yeah,
which is also funded by the Quebec government.
Also. So among the people who wrote a cherem against Rabbi Lander and Touro College, among them was Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And I have a copy of that cherem, which I think is the best cherem in my whole collection, my vast collection. The best cherem is Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's cherem against Rabbi Lander, in which he says, and I think I can quote it exactly, Yehi Yadua, let it be known. Yehi Yadua, Ki, let it be known that Yedidi Harav Hagaon Hamuvhak Betorah Umitzvot Hayadua Berabim Ki Yere Shemayim Harav Hagaon Baruch Lander Hu Becherem.
So he gives him all these accolades.
Yeah, what can I do?
Kind of contradicts your statement.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
So it's not real film.
Lander. No, definitely no relationship. Definitely not. Different family.
So what happened? Did he remain in Charon?
Sure. We're also still in Charon. Charons don't go away so quickly.
What?
It's much easier to get in than to get out.
This institution is in Charon?
Yeah, sure, because of the girls who live here.
Mm-hmm.
Just look around. You see,
so what are the consequences of being in Charon?
Apparently none.
but you just said that you're not allowed to take money from or have any business dealings with.
Yeah, so let's see how Rav Herzog approaches this issue.
Yeah.
Yesh shitot hayishonim, is a bet din yesh koach lahachrim. It's a bit machlokas among the Rishonim who has the authority to put someone in a harem. Lachem yesh safek bedin. אם יש כוח בבית דין לאסור על כל ישראל הנעת הנכסים של המוחרם וגם לאסורם על עצמו. It's very dubious whether anyone has the authority to impose the halachas of cherem on anyone, thereby creating an isur to have commerce with that person. כיוון דזהו בכוח הפקה בזדין הפקה. It's true that according to the Gemara, the Beis Din has the authority to deprive people of their property, but it is by no means clear that the modern Beis Din has that authority, and therefore it's a great doubt about whether or not the Beis Din has the capacity of putting someone in harem. Va'od yesh lomar she'en b'chlal acherem shelo yikayem mitzvat tzedakah or mitzvat tzimicha b'talmud Torah. And even if it were possible to put someone in harem, no one ever said that someone's being in harem blocks them from doing mitzvot. Someone who's in harem still has to do the mitzvah of putting on tefillin. Someone who's in harem still has to do the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Someone who's in harem still has to do the mitzvah of picking up a lulav. And they should still have to do the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. Like no one ever said
that. What about that shilat tzibur?
So we do not appoint them a shliach tzibur, but it's not a ta'am.
So what do the entire community is entitled? Like us?
Oh, well, then we're in trouble.
So the din of tefillah b'ktzibur, so we try.
One does not let them into the shul. Therefore, they cannot fulfill tefillah b'ktzibur, correct. Okay.
So people who are Muslim have to make their own money.
Yeah, that's what we do here, apparently.
but seriously.
We have to go to Meisham, they don't put their tithe. We've got to know what they're working on.
Back in the 1950s, in the early 1950s, there's a great struggle within the Eda Haredit in Meisharim over control over the Eda. It was basically a machloket between factions of Agudat Yisrael against Natura Karta. This is back in the early 1950s. Mm-hmm. The Natura Karta factions won, and in order to formalize their capture of authority in the Eda Haredit, they instituted a cherem. And the cherem they instituted was that anyone who sends his daughter to a Beit Yaakov school is in cherem. Thereby eliminating the possibility of being in Agudat Yisrael and the Eda Haredit simultaneously, right? Because you belong to Agudat Yisrael, so you send your daughter to Beis Yaakov, which is what all the yeshiva people do. That means that the overwhelming majority of the Hayyadi population of Yerushalayim are in cherem.
But is Natura Karta still in control of...
Yes, they're still in control of the Eda Haredit.
That's becoming a joke.
What?
That's becoming a joke.
No, I don't think that's true at all. I think it has become. Already has become. So he says, he also doesn't take it seriously, but he tells you the reason why not to take it seriously, namely the whole halakhic basis of Karen is very shaky, very shaky.
Well, how did he say that? He said that it's not clear that anyone has
the authority to create a Karen.
What?
So,
since no one can agree on anything.
No, because the authority depends upon the authority of Beit Din to deprive people of their property, and although that was an authority of the Sanhedrin, there's great doubt about whether contemporary Beit Din has that authority. Okay, you are. The Gubbis Israel are Zionist lackeys, and Natura Carta are true blue, rejecting any connection with the state.
It's a bit different.
That's it, yeah.
Natura Carta would not serve in the government. To say the least.
They do not accept money from the government either for their institutions.
Mm-hmm. How big are they? How many members?
Card carrying members?
Yeah.
They probably have card carrying members that probably have around maybe 150.
Is that really?
Families.
Well, that could be 5,000 people. But
there are people who don't pay dues and therefore do not have membership cards, but are probably, you know, allied with that movement, even though they're not officially members, they don't pay dues.
I went to a show of Brachot the other day, and three seemingly, apparently very elderly women came in, they had teeth. Now, they could have been 40, I don't know, but, speaking German to the woman who was giving the, afterwards, I asked her. I said, "Well, who are the nuns? I mean, they were dressed totally in black." She laughed. "Nuns? Those are my Natura Carta cousins."
And they speak German.
Yeah.
Not Yiddish.
Well, it sounded like they were speaking German to me. She could have been speaking Yiddish.
A German accent.
Well, she's family is originally from Germany.
Could be. Yeah, plenty of German family also. Could be. Okay, and even if there would be in Harem, even if there would be such a thing, so being in Harem does not prevent anyone from performing mitzvot, and therefore they should still be able to give tzedakah.
But what about the example of Tehillat HaTzibur of stopping them from doing mitzvot publicly? Shouldn't you stop them from taking your money if it was really interesting this term? Thinking of not letting them get a shul, you shouldn't let them near the stack of bucks?
The din is lo yeshev toch Dalad Amotav. You cannot sit within a distance of four amot of the person in Cherem. So you know, for all practical purposes he cannot join together with the minion in shul. Maybe he can stand outside the shul and look into a window or something, you know, but the people of the Kehillah do not have commerce with him. Makomakom, Kivan de Yeshbaza Pirza, Lahachnis, Machal Reshabis, Ma'achile, Israel, Eretz Israel, Ein Lekabel, Elabitzina. If we are going to accept support for our religious institutions from the Chilonim, which is what we're talking about here, that will bring into Eretz Israel Machal Reshabis and people who eat straight food. And that's not good, and therefore we should not give any public status to these people, and therefore if we're going to accept tzedakah from them, we should do it quietly, not in a public way. And this too, even taking money from them in private, should be avoided if it's possible to sustain the yeshiva without their support.
You do it this place doesn't constantly.
Yeah, because of course it couldn't exist without the support.
So they tried other methods?
Yeah, they tried to get from the inventory carta, but they didn't want to they didn't want to donate to us.
Because we were in Paris.
Right. So in order to survive, we have to take contributions from Chilonim.
And of course, so does every yeshiva, almost every yeshiva in the country, take contributions from Chilonim, at least indirectly.
Oh yeah? You're kidding.
Okay, you know, the government, right? Through the government.
You're kidding.
So
So how do they?
No. First of all, the yeshivas do not take any money at all from the government.
Wouldn't you?
What?
The Mir doesn't take anything from the government?
The Mir is not from. The Mir...
What is that from?
The Eid HaRedes, the yeshivas and institutions which are associated with Eid HaRedes do not take any money from the government, not a penny.
And Shas?
Shas does take. But they're Zionists.
They're in the government.
Right. Mir is more allied with the Goodish Israel, and they even participate in the government.
So, but how do they, how do they explain that they take money from the government?
Their ideological position is based as follows. They say, we do not accept any money from the government. We are merely retrieving what is ours.
Are you serious?
Yeah, we pay taxes, right? Mm-hmm. We pay taxes.
Most of them don't pay taxes.
Most of them don't, some of them do. And the money is due to us, support is due to us according to the principles of the way this money is dispersed. So we are merely going into the government to guarantee that what is rightfully due to us, we get. But we're not asking for anything beyond what is rightfully due to us. And if we would not go in there and fight for it, so we wouldn't even get that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, does it make a lot of sense? In New York, the yeshivas go through great efforts to get federal funding for their lunch programs. And it's the same reason then. The yeshivas, which try, many of them successfully, to get federal funding for their lunch programs, don't view themselves as receiving tzedakah from the non-Jewish government. They say, this is money which, according to the law of the land, is due to us.
Which law is that?
The laws which determine how federal funds are to be distributed.
Mm-hmm.
This is money which is rightfully due to us. We pay taxes, and this is money which is according to the law of the land, and we'll fill out the forms and get what is rightfully ours. Mm. We're not asking for anything beyond what is rightfully ours.
Maybe just a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know what the Moshe had to say about that. When you come to do your inland revenue, income tax, inland revenue. You guys have inland revenue or income tax?
Income tax.
North American English.
Maybe.
Yeah, North American English. He says, there are many gray areas in taxation laws. Some things you can get away with, some things you can't get away with. You know, like accountants know how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And some accountants are more honest than others. He says, the principle is like this, according to Moshe Feinstein. Halachically speaking, as far as halacha is concerned, it is acceptable for you to claim on your income tax return, it is acceptable halachically for you to claim any deduction which might conceivably be correct. As long as it might conceivably be correct, feel free to claim it on your income tax. And if the income tax authorities wish to challenge it and wish to have a judge make a decision, that's their business. But as long as it might conceivably be correct, feel free to claim it. And if they wish to challenge it, Bakasha will challenge it. A judge will make a decision.
Does that apply in Israel to a Jewish government or just to a non-Jewish government?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
This isn't a Jewish government.
The Chazanish also speaks about. Yes. What does he say?
He based himself on a run in
the run on Dini the
Machusa? Yeah.
Do you have to pay? The question is, how much do you have to pay? You have to pay in income tax, you have to pay in meches. If you import stuff from abroad, you have to pay meches. If you have income here, you have to pay income tax. But the amount you have to pay might not be so clear. There might be some room for disagreement about exactly what the law is, how much import tax you have to pay, meches, how much income tax you have to pay, mas hachnasa. And as long as you have to pay, al pi din Torah, you have to pay. But what you should do is pay the minimum that the law of the land might require, the minimum that might be correct according to the law of the land, and then if they wish to challenge you, so a judge will make a decision about whether it's right or wrong. You can't evade taxes, halachically. Halachically, you have to pay your taxes, but you don't have to volunteer more than is necessary, which means you pay the minimum. And if they think you have to pay more, I'll let them say so. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this issue of you think that many yeshivas are supported by Shilamin, the Bezalel Hochma deals with this question. The Bezalel Hochma, his name was Bezalel Stern, and he was the brother of the Be'er Moshe. He ran his other page, the Be'er Moshe. The Be'er Moshe is Rav Moshe Stern. The Be'er Moshe, Rav Moshe Stern, is still alive today. He's the Debrett Senior Rav in New York. The older brother, Bezalel Stern, died a few years ago. He was for many years a Rav in Melbourne, Australia. There's such a place, right? Mm-hmm. He was a Rav there. When he came in, towards the end of his life, he lived in Yerushalayim. He was asked about whether it's acceptable to receive contributions for a shul, contributions given to a shul by a goy or a Jew who converted to another religion, a Jew who thinks of himself as being a goy. Hinei baror shalidivrei sechah chasidim asur lekabel nidvat hamumar lebinyan beit hakneset. Sechah chasidim says you're not allowed to accept tzedakah for a shul if the tzedakah is given by someone who converted to idolatry. Hakasha shahalei hitir lemumar l'skor sefer v'lechtav sefer Torah. But the same sefer chasidim said that it's permissible for the convert to idolatry, for the mumar, it's permissible to write a sefer Torah. Says, it seems the Sefer Hasidim has contradicted itself. On one hand, he says it's usher to receive a contribution. On the other hand, it says it's mutter for them to write a Sefer Torah. So he'll be mechalik. Yeah, if he writes it himself, the Sefer Torah is puzzle. Yeah, but here he hired a kosher sofer. So the Sefer Torah is going to be kosher. In the Stei Chemed Teyetz, to the simon, in the first simon, where he asks taking money from the Meshumid, Ma'ei b'mumah la'akum dafke d'mine en l'kabla. Or the simon, Tafresh Pezayin, the simon which says it's okay for him to write the Sefer Torah, Ma'ei b'mumah l'sha'ar d'varam. According to the Stei Chemed, the resolution of the stira in the Sefer Hasidim is we're talking about different kinds of mumah. If we're talking about a Jew who really is over the Avodah Zarah, then indeed you can't accept any tzedakah from him, even a Sefer Torah. But if we're talking about a mumah who has not yet converted to another religion, he's just chiloni, then it's okay to accept the Sefer Torah which he had written by a kosher sofer. That's the position of the Stei Chemed. Lefize, mumah mechala shabbatot, someone who is mechala shabbos, stam chiloni, kishem shemekabel menu l'sefer Torah, hu adin l'binyan beis hakneses. Since it's okay to accept the Sefer Torah which he has written, similarly one can accept any contribution he gives to shul. V'chein ma'asim b'chol yom, shemozdot ha-Torah gam chayedim, מקבלים נדבות ממוארים לחלל שבתות לבניין מוסדיהם. It's the normal procedure in institutions, even Hayyadi institutions, and he was a Hayyadi posek, to accept contributions from Chilonim as long as they have not converted to another religion. רובם ככולם נמנעים לקבל ממומה שמשתמד וקיבל עליו דת אחרת. But if the Chiloni is worse than a Chiloni, he's actually accepted upon himself another religion, he's become a Christian or something like this,
a Reformed Jew.
He's become a Christian or another religion, then it would be proper not to receive contributions from him. Now, let's distinguish here between different levels of distance from the Frum community. There are those who are Shomrei Torah, that's very nice. There are those who are Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia. They are outside of the community of Shomrei Torah, but they're not yet, they have not yet put themselves together with Goyim by converting to another religion.
But what did you
do? In public, Bifur Hesia.
But they may not be doing that amazing.
Yeah, so we come to this in a moment. And then there are those who are mishumadim, they've actually joined other religions. And we see the gradation in how we relate to them in the B'Tzela Hachma. If they're just a little bit outside, maybe they're chilonim, we can still accept contributions from them. If they're all the way outside, namely they join another religion, we don't even accept contributions from them. Now, This middle group of Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia, people who are Mechalel Shabbos in public, needs a little bit of definition. The first of the great poskim to deal with the modern Chiloni, and the modern Chiloni is very different from the classical Chiloni. The first great modern poskim to deal with this was the Melamed Lahori, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, the Rosh Yeshiva of Berlin. And since he was in Berlin, where Haskalah and modern things got started first, he was the first of the great poskim to deal with many modern issues, including this. And here's the approach. In antiquity, in pre-modernity, the Jews were all Shomrei Torah. There was no such thing as Chiloniyut in pre-modern times. Therefore, a Jew in pre-modern times who was Mechalel Shabbos in a public way was cutting himself off from the Jewish community. Whereas in modern times we have a new phenomenon which didn't exist in pre-modern times. In modern times we have a phenomenon of people who are not Shomrei Torah but still think of themselves as being part of the Jewish community. Are you?
In the world?
I only know about the basement. I don't know about that. So this is the kind of person which didn't exist in antiquity. Then the Mechal Shabbos Bifur Hesia, the Chiloni, but they don't view themselves as cutting themselves off from the Jewish people. So the Melamed Lahori was of the opinion that these people do not have the halachic status of Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia. In order to have the halachic status of Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia, the Chilul Shabbos, the violation of halacha, has to be with the attitude that one is cutting oneself off from the Jewish community. Therefore, the ordinary Chiloni out there, Yesh Chiloni, the ordinary Chiloni out there, still views himself as being Jewish, and therefore the halachas of Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia would not apply to him. Therefore, although it is clear in the halacha that Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia cannot be joined to a minyan, if you have 9 people and you're looking for a 10th to complete a minyan, you cannot join to the minyan someone who's Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia. That was in those days where Mechalel Shabbos Bifur Hesia had cut himself off from the Jewish community. But an ordinary Chiloni out there can be joined as the 10th person to a minyan.
Since he views himself as the Jewish community.
Yes, no, it doesn't matter. Yes or no, doesn't matter.
It's a very inclusivist approach.
Oh, I would prefer the inclusivist. Yeah, I like that.
It's a term of
She fell off socks. I like that. I like that too. Inclusivist.
You may have some, like, I'm in the ordinary feeling in, which may I give, want to give stuff out, but how can you tell who's who? Because they just kind of check in.
Yeah, so if you don't know, you go according to the majority, and the majority of them are kosher from disrespect. And you might have out there some chilonim, some individual chilonim, who've not converted to another religion, but still view themselves as being cut off from the Jewish people. They want nothing to do.
A Jewish atheist.
Even some of those. I don't know. They usually have to be viewed individually. But some of them might view themselves as having nothing to do with Am Yisrael. And indeed, they would have the status of Michal Shabbos Bifasi, and all those halachas would apply. But there are not many of those people out there.
Well, how about Stam non-Jews? Where do they fall in?
Idolaters.
Idolaters.
No. Idolaters are not like them.
But suppose they send you a check.
So this was spoken about last time. Last time we figured out a reason why it's okay to accept the contributions mailed in by goyim, real goyim.
And?
Yeah, we figured out reasons why it's okay. Now, what's the difference between accepting contribution b'fahesia and b'tzina? We saw all these people who said that b'tzina, it's okay, b'fahesia not. If you're going to put their name in big letters up on the thing, that there's nothing more b'fahesia than any of that. That's a public acknowledgement of the contribution. Whereas if their name is not going on the institution, you're quite welcome. B'hatzlacha rabba. If their name is not going on the not making a public plaque, then that's chitzina. Now, there are all kinds of rishoyim out there, Jewish rishoyim, who give contributions to Jewish institutions. They might be ganavim or engaged in all kinds of things which are usher, and they give money to a Jewish organization, and if their name is going to go up in big letters, that's a bifarhesia accepting of the contribution. Well, surely not desirable. I mean, if the institution can survive without it, it's surely better to survive without it. If it can't survive without it, so then we have the shitot. They shall see in relation to material. Is good? Okay.
Okay, so that's the classic heter, because no institution can survive without it in modern times, basically, because...
Sotnos seems to
there's
several yeshivas. There are several yeshivas associated with the Eda Haredit, which accept no money from non-Haredi sources.
And where did the sources get money from?
These Jews in Brooklyn or Montreal. There's a Rabbi Hirschbaum who... He knows some rich Jews in Montreal who give money to these places. Let us then pause at this time.
Is there another shiur next week?
This is it. A Thursday?
Thursday.
Thursday, I'm going to try to come in on Thursday. But I don't guarantee 100%. I'm pretty sure I can make it. I'm going to do Thursday morning in Bnei Brak. But I think I can come back on Thursday afternoon for sure. Should work out.
Totally unconnected question.
Yes.
It has to do with a sukkah.
Mm-hmm.
In building a wall, that's really what's a kosher wall. Mm-hmm. I have this pergola outside, and I want to use this wood that's how far above the ground can it start, and how high must it go?
The gap between the bottom of the wall and the floor cannot be more than 3 tefachim.
there's sheep in that one.
No, three tefachim. The bottom of the wall has to come within three tefachim.
So that's about 10 inches or so,
right? Yes. And the top of the wall has to be at least 10 tefachim off the ground, that's around the yard.
So a meter is...
If you want the exact measurement, so... having at home centimeters or inches.
But would a meter be sufficient, or do we not know?
A meter in height is sufficient.
It's certainly sufficient.
Yes.
Okay, and it'll certainly be at least a meter. And our figure just maybe about that far off the ground.
That's not.
And the fact that that cross section has openings in it, that's not.
Doesn't matter.
What kind of solid? You know, what kind of openings are not
gaps,
considered
gaps
solid?
Gaps, which are bigger than 3 feet.
So that's the basic.
If you have gaps bigger than 3 feet, and then we have to start calculating the whole wall, whether the majority of the wall are such gaps.
Uh-huh.
As long as the gaps are under 3 feet, then they're considered solid.
So basically, you could have a wall that's